Good evening and welcome to this virtual meeting of Murrindindi Shire Council. We are holding this meeting via Zoom and live streaming to the public in line with the COVID-19 Omnibus Emergency Measures Act 2020, passed by Victorian Parliament on the 23rd of April 2020. Should technical issues arise at any point, I as Chair will immediately adjourn the meeting. If we cannot restart the meeting within 30 minutes, the meeting will be adjourned to another time and the public will be notified. Thank you for taking the time to view tonight's meeting. Councillors, please raise your right hand. As the councillors democratically elected to represent our community as a Murrindindi Shire Council, we are committed to working together in the best interest of the people who live in our municipality, who conduct business here, and those who visit. We would like to acknowledge the Tongan traditional owners and their ancestors as the traditional owners of the land on which we are meeting virtually, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Thank you. Are there any apologies or requests for leave of absence?
None received, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Item three is normally community recognition, and we will hopefully be able to commence this once council is able to meet in person. Is there any disclosures of interest or conflict of interest? Thank you. Item five, the confirmation of the meeting, of the minutes of the meeting of the 27th of January. Would someone like to move that council confirm the minutes of the 27th of January 2021 scheduled meeting of council?
Madam Mayor, I'll move.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. And thank you, Councillor Lording, to second. All those in favour? Thank you. And would someone like to move that council confirm the minutes of the 27th of January 2021 confidential meeting of council? Thank you, Councillor Haslam. And to someone to second that, please. Thank you, Councillor Geringer. Are there any petitions?
None received, Madam Mayor. Madam Mayor, you'll need to vote on that last item.
Sorry, my apologies. Yes, of course, I all those in favour? Thank you very much. Public participation, Mr. Chesworth.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Murrindindi Shire Council welcomes you to this open forum. Open forum provides an opportunity to address council. This can be on one or more topics, but is to be limited to 5 minutes in total. The CEO or mayor will provide a 1 minute warning after 4 minutes. Submissions as part of open forum may be on any matter listed on the agenda or any other matter, provided that any submission extends due courtesy and respect to council and is not prejudicial to any person or organisation. Please note that this meeting is being streamed live on the internet and a copy of the recording will be published on council's website. So you should take care in disclosing any personal or sensitive information. As chair of this meeting, the mayor reserves the right to cease a submission if it is deemed inappropriate. So when you are asked to speak, please state your name, the name of any organisation you represent, and the matter on which you wish to speak. At the end of your submission, whilst there'll be no discussion or debate, councillors may wish to ask you questions. If your topic relates to an item for decision on today's agenda, this will be dealt with as listed on the agenda. Otherwise, the matter will be referred to the relevant director for investigation and response in due course. At the end of open forum, there'll be no further opportunity for public participation in the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chesworth. I'd like to then call Mr. Mark Feltrin. Thank you.
At this stage, Madam Mayor, Mr. Feltrin isn't with us, so we can move on to the next speaker.
Oh, sorry, I've somehow inadvertently closed my Zoom. What have I done?
We can still see you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Sorry, what did you say, Mr. Chairsworth?
Yeah, Mr. Feltrin is not with us, so we move on to the next speakers.
Sorry, my apologies. Mr. Donders and Glenn Kell calling, please.
Okay, thank you. That was a bit of delay.
Welcome, Mr. Kell.
Hello, thank you. Thank you, Madam Mayor and councillors. And Tony's on the line. You just need to unmute yourself, please, Tony. And the bottom left-hand corner. Sorry about this.
Oh, we understand. Oh.
Hey, Tony, if you can hear me, you just need to, there he is.
Okay. Sorry about that, everyone.
Perfect. Thank you. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present today. My name is Glenn Kell. I'm a planning consultant working for the Donders family. And it's in relation to item 8.1 in today's agenda at an application at 105 Parsons Road in Fawcett. And it's a joint presentation we'd like to make today. So I'll just go first and then I'll hand it to Tony to talk about his vision and the intent for the land. So the application's for the use and development of a dwelling on a lot of about 8 hectares. The land's zoned farming and there's no overlays. So there's no overlays relating to environment, landscape or bushfire that you might normally find in this sort of location. The land currently not used for farming purposes and there's no dwelling or outbuildings there. And we've carefully put together a planning application that we believe responds to the planning requirements. In particular, I'd like to just say at the outset that this is a dwelling to accompany a bona fide agricultural use of the land. And Tony can elaborate a little bit more in his own words about what he's intending to do there in a moment. The application is very thorough and comprehensive based on my 30 years of experience. It includes detailed site plans, dwelling plans, a very, very detailed farm management plan, an environmental improvement plan, which we thought was really important, where there is a waterway that runs through the site. It's currently eroded, degraded. There's not much vegetation holding the embankments together. We're proposing to fence that, keep stock away from it, and improve the environment. And then there's a land capability assessment that looks at waste disposal on site. The application was put on notice. There was no objections. So therefore, in offering my support to the proposal, I think it's important to consider what it is and what it isn't. And what it is a bona fide, legitimate application for the Donders family to live and farm on the land, as proposed. What it isn't, it's not an application for a dwelling in a broad acre farming area. And if it was a broad acre farming area here, I'd really have trouble supporting this from a planning point of view, but it's not. There's a lot of 3 to 8 to 30 hectare properties all along this area. It's been subdivided. So on this basis, I believe the proposal is worthy of councillor support tonight. And I'd like to just hand over to Tony to elaborate a little bit about what he's wanting to do in his own words, please. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Glenn. And thank you, councillors, for allowing us to have our say tonight. So basically what I want to say is pretty much the same as what Glenn has just said. To us, the application isn't about just putting a house on a farming zone lot. It's about creating or having a farm that both me and Sharon have always wanted to be able to do. So we've spent many years living in the Yarra Valley, which is in the outer suburbs of Melbourne, but not been able to really experience and live in a full rural setting like we have up there at Alexandra. Our proposal to farm the land and have alpacas and other activities on the farm, be it fruit, vegetable, chickens, beehives for honey. We're familiar with most of those things. We do that on our half an acre that we have here now. Also the...
1 minute remaining, Madam Mayor.
Sorry?
1 minute remaining.
Okay, thank you. Also, the concept of farming to us isn't totally new. My father owns 40-odd hectares up at Murchison that we've often gone up and looked after and maintained for him. And given I've got 1 minute, the other big thing for us is becoming part of a rural community. We've always wanted to be able to live in a rural setting and be part of a community where we can both contribute and be active members of a community. Rural communities to us are just so much more a tight-knit group of people compared to what you get in a city or even in the outer reaches of the city where we are now. And for us, that's always been a goal of ours, to live in that sort of community and that sort of setting and be able to, as I said, be part of that community and contribute. We look forward to possibly being able to use businesses and locals to build and establish the farm that we'd love to
be able to stay with. That's time, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chesworth. Thank you, Tony, and thank you, Glenn. Do councillors have any questions? Councillor Lording.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Tony, is the land at the moment being used for agricultural purposes?
No, at the present time, I don't believe it's being used for agricultural purposes. So we've looked at the land probably 12 months ago, and we've recently, obviously, put in a proposal to buy the land, which was a good 6 to 8 months ago. And the land hasn't been agriculturally used or farmed at all for that period. We've frequently visited up there. And at no stage have there been any kind of agricultural activities happening on that land.
I'm sorry, I normally go and have a look at places, but is there any noxious weeds or anything on there? Is it unkept at all?
The grass and stuff that's on the lot at the moment is quite significant, and there is signs of weeds and also vermin pushing underneath the fences and so forth. On the lot at the moment, there's numbers of branches and stuff that have fallen off the trees that are on the lot that aren't being cleaned up or looked after. So obviously, if the lot's left in the state that it is and not being maintained, it will become, less likely and less available for agricultural use in the future.
Yeah. Would you mind sharing with us approximately the value of the house you're looking at putting on it, just to give an idea to us sort of development you're trying to do?
Yep, the development that we're looking to invest into the property with sheds, the actual dwelling, fencing, and other infrastructure would be probably in the vicinity of $400,000, maybe more.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all from me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lording. Are there any other questions from councillors? Thank you very much. Much appreciated for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, councillors.
Thank you.
I'd like to see if Mark Feltram's available, if he's been able to join us. I believe so. Thank you. Thank you. Good evening. Is that Mark Feltrin?
Yes, it is. Hello, Councillor.
So you're just coming up. I thank you. You've changed your name. Thank you. Welcome to tonight.
Thank you. I'm reading from notes, so bear with me. Thank you.
We understand.
My name's Mark Feltrin. I'm a 20-year resident of Strathcreek. I've initiated three significant projects, including through planning an ecological vegetation management plan, but also to the Strathcreek Biodiversity and Carbon Project. And my latest project I initiated and developed was the Strathcreek, the King Parrot Catchment Fox Control Project. I am coming to you after conversation with Danny Eaton, Manager of Resource Recovery, who suggested I engage with council members. I'm a steering committee member of the King Parrot Catchment Fox Control Project, and we are the most impactful and cost-effective terrestrial vertebrate biodiversity project in the region. This project is now 5 years old, and we have managed to achieve significant control in our area of the fox population. This project is a landscape scale, cross-jurisdictional, community-based pest predator animal project. It is premised on the acknowledgement foxes are all our problem and are the greatest threat to terrestrial biodiversity, and is also a costly and nuisance element to the rural economy, particularly to the sheep and poultry industries. This project is modelled on the state government's ARC project, conducted on state land with particular emphasis on the Southern ARC project based in Gippsland with its leader, Andrew Murray of DELP. We have gained both encouragement and strong scientific underpinning to develop here a community-based version of that program. Our catchment is large, ranging in the west Strathcreek to the east King Lake West, to the north where the Goulburn and the Strathcreek Creek meets, and in the south bordering the Mount Disappointment State Forest. Every year, mainly on two periods, we act in a steering committee group to bring together all parties to go about to try to coordinate all our control activities. This includes all forms of control. We also, in parallel and as importantly, undertake a biodiversity assessment utilizing remote cameras. No other group in this area does this. And to ensure safety and build on social confidence, we provide through the assistance of Landcare free training in farm chemical courses, so that the rural community can get proper accreditation and also underpin our safety credentials. To note, no pets have been killed or harmed during this time. And also we undertake many presentations on this topic. We prioritize trying to get many to do a little, including people not wanting to employ control methods. We're here for the long haul, meaning that this project has no end. We prove outcomes, not just show work. We're bringing true financial value to the rural economy. We emphasize being as safe as possible. And our understanding of the problem is that foxes aren't the problem, but the problem is making people and jurisdictions do the work to undertake the achievable and cost-effective outcomes. To date, the cost of the program has been about $50,000 over 5 years, but accounting for the reduction...
1 minute remaining, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chesworth.
But accounting for the stock reductions, the livestock losses, particularly with sheep and poultry, the real cost is significantly less. This is a program that is replicable Australia-wide, and we see great possibilities for it further afield. And this will be discussed, and this project will be discussed at the next Australasian Pest Vertebrate Conference. This project has been an excellent prototype and it's a success story for the rest of Australia to observe, and we hope Murrindindi Council members will take more interest and give support to this project into the future. We are happy to give council members more information, and we hope you begin to more closely follow the most impactful, cost-effective, beneficial environment and rural economic project in the region. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Feltrin. Are there any questions from councillors? No. There's no questions. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Feltrin.
Hey, Mayor.
Sorry.
No, it was my fault. I was having a bit of trouble. Mark, just a quick one. Is there a website or anything where we can get more information?
No, look, there isn't. The information will come and talk to myself and Chris Coburn and other committee members. That's one on the list.
Okay, Mark, can you get on the website, please, and look up my contact details and send me your contact details and I'll get in touch with you.
Thank you. Thank you for the interest. Have a good day.
Thank you very much, Mr. Feltrin. Good evening. Do we have Mr. Falconer available as yet?
He is available, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Yes, hello now. Yep.
Good evening.
Good evening. Okay. Thank you, councillors. Thank you, councillors and Madam Mayor, for letting me speak today. I'm Rod Faulkner. I'm from Snobs Creek. I'm the chairperson of the Rubicon Snobs Creek Recreational Forest Reserve, and I want to speak about the deforestation logging within the Snobs Creek catchment. The Snobs Creek water catchment is of unique ecological value in that it is a closed, geographic, discrete and fragile catchment that relies upon a combination of ground and surface water springs that supply clean, filtered and pristine water to the creek on a year-round basis. The Snobs Creek hatchery was carefully chosen in the 1940s directly as a result of these values. The hatchery has for 75 years been the sole provider of both introduced and native fish to over 200 waterways across the state, and in turn supports a huge recreational fishing industry to the tune of $2.6 billion per year. Snobs Creek is and always has been the backbone of this industry. The facility remains the only major agricultural industry that draws its water from the creek. We believe that the Victorian government and their agencies have failed to apply the precautionary principle in respect to past, present, and planned clearfell logging operations within the catchment. It's our belief that the said parties have failed to have demonstrated the scientific evidence that past, present, and planned operations within the catchment will not adversely affect both the riverine health in Snobs Creek and the impact on fish production at the facility. We also believe that these stakeholders have failed to provide the scientific evidence that the increased sedimentation and nutrient loads into the creek as a result of the logging will not have a major impact on fish sustainability in Snobs Creek and also downstream in the Goulburn River. Our immediate concerns are the increase in turbidity and suspended solids within the creek, the increase in stream temperatures, and the loss of water volume and water yield. Under the current TRP, in addition to the three coops that have already been logged within the catchment, directly adjacent to the Snobs Creek Road, another 20 plus coops are planned that are in close proximity to the creek. These coops have no buffer zones as required by Vic Forest Code of Practice. And during any rain event in the valley, result in huge sedimentation loads flushing directly into the creek. We have a low confidence in DELP's pre-harvest surveys of flora and fauna species within the Rubicon State Forest. Most of these studies are from historical desktop surveys and not current on-the-ground field surveys. Our concerns here are validated by recent federal court injunctions placed on Vic Forest operations in 66 areas of threatened species habitat within the Central Highlands. We believe that there is more than compelling evidence from coops that have been extensively logged in the Rubicon State Forest that regeneration of the forest has failed due to the silting up and diversion of watercourses as a direct result of this deforestation logging. The logging has resulted in large-scale soil disturbance, erosion, infestation of weeds into a once dense biodiverse forest. Our long-term concerns are for the future production...
1 minute remaining, Madam Mayor.
..at the Snobs Creek Hatchery and the future of recreational fishing alone across Victoria. Water is worth 25 times the value of the logs taken out. And within the Murrindindi Shire, 88% of these logs are turned into wood chip pulp and they are used in products such as cardboard boxes and paper. We also are worried about the impact on tourism. In concluding, Madam Mayor, science informs us that far fewer environmental impacts arise from sourcing timber in well-managed plantation systems. Economics echoes the many benefits of plantation harvesting over clearfell logging. The research by Australian and international climate, water and forest scientists tell us the urgency to protect our local ecosystems are now.
Thank you, Mr. Chesworth. Are you nearly finished, Mr. Falconer?
Just one more sentence, Madam Mayor. Thank you.
Certainly.
We know how ecosystems function and why they cease to function. Surely, this is my last statement, Madam Mayor, surely this fact has been brought home to us all over in the last 12 months. The application of the scientific principle has, metaphorically speaking, slayed the COVID dragon. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Falconer. Are there any questions from councillors? Councillor Lording.
My unmute actually worked. Rod, just a question. I haven't been able to get up there in the last few weeks, but I've had a report that there is something on the surface of the roads up there that causes a lot of dust. It's almost like a cement dust. Are you aware of that and what it is and what sort of danger that is to the leaves that it all falls on?
I'm not aware, Councillor Lording, of the. I know they do put that dust on to settle the road. I don't know about the ecological damage, but it wouldn't be very good, and it's not very sightly. The Snobs Creek, the waterfall, is a hugely popular tourist attraction. But I can't answer you in any more. But I certainly would say it wouldn't have a very good environmental effect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Please. Thank you. There's no more questions there, Mr. Falconer. Thank you very much for your presentation tonight.
Thank you, councillors.
Okay, Mr. Chesworth, questions of council?
Yes, Madam Mayor, we have two. Both are from Mr. Jack Russell. The first reads, what reason is given for the council's council executive attempts to direct my riding councillor, Stu Carpenter, with respect to my request for a face-to-face meeting for her awareness of the issues raised with council and not actioned? And the second question is, what is the outcome of my reasonable request to meet with Councillor Carpenter? And the response to Mr. Russell is, Councillor Carpenter wrote to Mr. Russell on the 16th of February 2021 stating, thank you for your correspondence. I encourage you in future to forward any letters addressed to me to council directly and not my private address. As you currently have court action pending against council and our previous chief executive officer in the Supreme Court, it is not appropriate that I meet with you at this time. If you have any concerns in relation to this or you are requiring council services, please direct these to the acting chief executive officer in writing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairsworth. Given that that's the end of our open forum, on behalf of council, I would like to thank all of you for submitting questions and presenting as part of open forum. All questions of council and open forum submissions will be referred to the relevant director if a further response is required. The ordinary meeting will now commence in accordance with the published agenda. Councillors have been briefed and discussed the reports that will be considered tonight. Your questions and contributions to the open forum have assisted councillors to have a greater understanding of the matter, of the matters which we will be determining. You are most welcome to stay and observe the meeting. Thank you. Moving on then to item 8.1, the use and development of the land for the purpose of a dwelling, 105 Parsons Road, Fawcett. Calling Ms. Gartland, please.
Madam Mayor, I wonder if I could just ask Mr. Albertini if Owen Clara's arriving now, I think. Yep.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So this application is for the use and development of the land for the purpose of a dwelling at 105 Parsons Road. As we've already heard tonight, the subject site is in the farming zone with no overlays applying to the land. A planning permit is required for the use and development of land for the purpose of a dwelling in the farming zone on lots under 40 hectares. As the subject site is 8 hectares in size and located between the townships of Alexandra and Yark. In support of this application, the applicant has proposed to establish an alpaca breeding business. In addition, they intend to plant fruit trees and keep bees and chooks to sell their produce. Council officers do not consider this proposal to be consistent with local and state planning policy or the purpose of the farming zone. Local policy consists of strategic directions of Murrindindi Shire Council contained in Clause 2.03. These include to protect rural land for productive agricultural uses and compatible rural uses, ensure agricultural land is not developed primarily for residential purposes, discourage the fragmentation of rural land into lots incapable of productive and agricultural or rural use. Council officers do not consider this proposal to be consistent with this policy. Furthermore, state planning policy relevant to this application includes land use compatibility in Clause 1307-1S. This introducing rural residential development into agricultural areas can undermine the practices of large productive farms. The amenity expectations of landowners in rural areas are not always aligned with the typical land use activities of legitimate farming business properties, and this can lead to conflict. Residential use, such as the one proposed, must only be supported when it has been demonstrated that the dwelling will not cause conflict with agricultural land uses in the area. The protection of agricultural land policy is relevant to this application and contains the following strategies. to protect productive agricultural land from unplanned loss due to permanent changes in land use, and to encourage consolidation of existing isolated small farm lots in rural zones. This proposal is in conflict with this policy. The use and development of the land for a dwelling is a permanent change to the land use. If a dwelling is constructed on the site, it will permanently limit the agricultural use of this and surrounding sites. Furthermore, this proposal will not encourage the consolidation of this small lot in the farming zone. State planning policy in relation to rural residential development is relevant in this proposal. The subject land is located in the farming zone, sitting outside any townships where residential uses are both supported and encouraged. While the applicant has provided a farm management plan and intends to run alpacas and chickens as well as growing fruit trees, it is considered that the primary use of the land will be for residential purposes. The subject site has an area of approximately 8 hectares, and with the domestic zone, including the house, shed and effluent area, taken away from the agricultural use, as well as the areas of the site that would benefit from having stock excluded, such as the waterways and the large native trees on site, the remainder of the site to be utilised for the agricultural use would be very small and not sufficient to maintain a viable agricultural enterprise. The purpose of the farming zone is to encourage the retention of productive agricultural land to ensure that non-agricultural uses, including dwellings, do not adversely affect the use of the land for agriculture, and to encourage use and development of land based on comprehensive and sustainable land management practices and infrastructure provisions. As has been discussed, the proposed residential use and development is not considered to be consistent with the purpose of the farming zone. The submitted farm management plan has not demonstrated that a dwelling is required on site for the ongoing management of the property. It is a, offers a recommendation that a refusal to grant a permit be issued for the use and development of a, of land for the purpose of a dwelling at 105 Parsons Road in Fawcett. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gartland. Are there any questions from councillors? Councillor Walsh.
Yes, Ms. Gartland. I noticed in the submission, which was quite detailed, as brought out earlier, there was a farm management plan in relation to alpacas in the United Kingdom. Has there been any subsequent work to indicate how alpacas would be managed on this particular piece of land?
No, none have been submitted.
Okay. We heard also, we heard earlier on that the land hadn't been used for agricultural purposes, but is it part of an original farming area that has been used for agricultural purposes in the past?
I believe so. We have attended the site on occasions, but not necessarily seen grazing at the time, but I wouldn't be entirely sure of the history of this site exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. Are there any further questions? Councillor Haslam.
Is this prime agricultural land or is it agricultural land? How productive is it? Do we know?
That's a challenging question, actually. Cameron, I don't know if you'd like to comment on this. I would probably just point out, though, because I think it was raised by the consultant, that there aren't overlays identifying this land as especially environmentally significant. But recently we have been to VCAT cases where they have established that that doesn't determine it as unproductive agricultural land. I think given that this land is currently undeveloped, makes it quite highly have a high potential for productivity. But beyond that, it'd be hard to comment.
Thank you.
Cam, did you want to?
Yeah, look, just through you, Madam Mayor, I was just going to add in, we do have areas within the municipality that are identified as being highly significant agricultural land. This area isn't contained within one of those overlays, but that's not to say that it's low agricultural or anything like that. So while we do have areas that are specifically identified, This area isn't one of them. But as Clara mentioned with previous case law and a recent case concerning our municipality, it's still, while it's undeveloped, it is considered to be productive agricultural value. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fraser. Councillor Lording.
Maybe I can help a little bit here. I did some homework on this. It does appear that the owner of the farm now lives in Day. He's getting on in a few years, maybe a couple more than me. And he doesn't live there, and that's why there's not a lot of remedial work being done on the property. So I just thought I'd add that.
Thank you, Councillor Lording. Are there any further questions from councillors? All right, if there's no further questions, would someone like to move a motion? Sorry, Councillor Gallagher?
Per the officer's recommendation, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. Is there a seconder? Councillor Carpenter? Got to keep myself on track. Okay, Councillor Gallagher, would you like to speak for the motion, please?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The officer's report on the application is quite compelling. Having identified many issues to overcome, the analysis is an interpretation in law of the Murrindindi Planning Scheme and the Planning and Environment Act 1987, ad hoc granting a residential land use planning approval on small allotments in the farming zone is not the most appropriate action. The consequential contention, potentially for generations hence, between smaller, primarily residential landholders and those of neighbouring farming operations is one perennially encountered by the Murrindindi Shire councillors. I genuinely feel for the applicants, Mr. and Mrs. Donders. Having spoken to Tony several times now, I'm certain that they will be fine additions to the community. To that end, I do support an agreement by council to sponsor an urgent broad review of land zoning in Murrindindi Shire. And specific to this application, I support the rezoning of appropriately located and appropriately serviced parcels of land for reassignment to rural living zone and for considered development for the enjoyment of individuals and families seeking to live where they conduct their small farming pursuits. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gallagher. Councillor Carpenter, would you like to speak to the motion?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak for the motion? Councillor Lording.
I wish to speak against the motion. I've been on council now for a number of years and these things come up all the time, and I have spoken to Clara about how much I hate these particular units because it hurts families. I do think that with land like this that's not being taken care of, that it'd be better to have a house on there and someone to actually take care of that land, especially when the farmer has moved out and he's moved now into Yea. If you look at the economic value, I looked up the ads for the land around there. Certainly 8 hectare land costs around about 268K with a 400K house and various other things put in there. And certainly the proposer did say that he would use as much of the local people as he can. So if you look at that, we're bringing in, you know, $500,000 worth of, far more than that. Also, they're going to spend about, you know, 40K a year in the local community. I spoke to him about that. They're also going to pay in the next 10 years some $30,000 to our shire. One of my big push buttons, if you like, apart from youth development, is economic development of this shire. By knocking this back, we are actually doing ourselves a lot of disservice. So I totally support what Councillor Gallagher says, we really need to look into this and we need to do it fairly quickly and do it the right way. But I will be voting against this motion as just my objection to the way we evaluate this. But I know we have to by law. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lording. Is there anyone else that would speak? Councillor Walsh.
Yes, I wish to support the motion. The reason being is that over the past three councils that I'm aware of, every time the councils go to the community about the forthcoming four-year council plan, the community always restates its desire to have a retention of the rural landscapes. Now, the only way we can do that at the moment is by supporting the current planning scheme and the current restrictions. I also recognise the proposal put by Councillor Gallagher and endorsed by Councillor Lording that we should be starting to look a little more granular in our approach to land management and undertake a full assessment of the available land with a view to retaining as much of the productive, it doesn't have to be prime agricultural land, but certainly productive agricultural land as we can, and looking closely at where we should be doing future developments, not just to have hobby farms, but also to cater for the increased numbers that appear to be wanting to come here out of Melbourne lately, and to do so in a way that is cost effective, not just in an initial sense, but also the long-term sense of maintaining infrastructure to support those new dwellings. So at this stage, we don't have all of that in place. And so I've got to support the current planning scheme, which means I support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. Was there anyone else wishing to speak to the motion? Councillor Haslam.
I too, it's a difficult situation because I do feel for the family. But I do have to support the officer's recommendation in this instance because of the legalities. However, I do think, the same as the other councillors, that there is a need to review our strategic plan and planning, as there is a need for rezoning that enable an increase in permanent residence, economic growth, greater infrastructure, employment, education opportunities, prosperity and overall well-being for our community. Agriculture or farming doesn't have to be the old way. We need to be a little bit more open-minded because there's all different types of farming. You can have smaller crops. You can have asparagus as an example. It doesn't need to be the old way of doing things, that it can still be farming. And if we put things in place with our planning, as an example, that you have screening to maybe seclude houses so it still has the right ambience, then we can still comply and have that rural feel. So, yeah, that's all I'd like to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Haslam. Any further comments? Okay, Councillor Gallagher, would you like to close?
May I speak briefly, Madam Mayor, before closing? I just wanted to, again, give the applicant and Councillor Lording every assurance that the council officer's recommendation was not a commentary on the viability of the business, on them as individuals. It's an interpretation of what can be done on that parcel of land, on the farming zone. And so that's why I would be proposing that a longer term, more beneficial solution for a broader community is for the reallocation of some areas to rural zone, rural living zone, for the appropriate purpose, which is what the applicants are for. And closing.
Well
Thank
said.
I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving then on to item 9.1, the final draft community engagement policy. Ms. Brown, please.
Thanks, Madam Mayor, and good evening, councillors. The purpose of this report is to present to Council the draft community engagement policy, and it's for adoption tonight. And it's required by the Local Government Act, and which stipulates that it should be adopted by the 1st of March this year. And while Council already has a community engagement policy in place, the Act also now is far more prescriptive in what Council should be including in the policy. And it really wants to see that the policy supports decision making that's driven by the community, that aligns objectives across various strategic bodies of work, and that it understands the medium to long-term implications for Council's resources and performance. So the attached policy meets the requirements of the Local Government Act by allowing for engagement practices that are capable of being applied to Council's local laws, our budget, all other policy development, and things like our community vision, the Council plan, and financial and assets plans. It describes the types and forms of engagement depending on the significance and the complexity of the matter and the level of resourcing required. And so examples that would demonstrate the differences there would include, say, an engagement piece about what time our facilities open compared to a process that really tries to nut out what Council should do about climate change, as an example. They would be two very different activities due to the really different amount of information and understanding the participants would need to have to be able to have those conversations. The attached policy is grounded in engagement practices that are tried and tested for Council, and it brings in our experiences of engaging with the community through the months of the pandemic last year. It also draws, though, some inspiration from the Local Government Act for practices for the future and around ways that we can engage that will promote deep and considered deliberations on issues that are really gnarly and contentious and very important to us all. And unfortunately, the timeframes for developing the policy have been very, very tight in order for us to meet the 1st of March deadline. Nevertheless, we've had really good feedback from residents about the policy, and a big thank you to all of them for their time and support in the development of the document before you tonight. As you're aware, we ran a survey and hosted some forums to get feedback to develop the first draft, and then we released that to the public for further feedback, and we did get some more then as well. That's all been incorporated into the policy as appropriate, and so I'm really confident that this policy is a good statement of the intention of this Council to work alongside its community to deliver value for our residents and our visitors too. So, Madam Mayor, the officer recommendation is that Council adopt the final draft community engagement policy contained at attachment 9.1.1.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Are there any questions from councillors? Thank you. Would someone like to move a motion? Councillor Lording.
As per the officer's recommendation, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Haslam. Councillor Lording, would you like to speak for the motion?
No, thank you, but I'd just like to thank Siobhan for all the work she's done on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Haslam, would you like to speak for the motion?
No, just to say thank you to Ms. Brown, because they've been doing a great job.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak for to the motion? Given there's no further conversation, Councillor Lording, do you want to close?
Close, please, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving then on to item 11.1, the Councillor Conduct of Councillor Code of Conduct 2021. And I will be presenting to that item. So bear with me, please. The Local Government Act 2020, Section 139, requires council to adopt a councillor code of conduct within 4 months of the general election. Our councillor code of conduct has been designed around the standards of conduct as prescribed by the Local Government Act, Governance and Integrity Regulations 2020. These being 1, treatment of others, 2, performing the role of councillor, 3, compliance with good governance measures, 4, council must not mislead or discredit the council or public, and 5, standards do not limit robust political debate. Whilst the councillors were supported by council officers in developing this code, importantly, this document is owned by us and provides the community with a statement of how we as elected councillors will conduct ourselves while undertaking our roles. In addition to the requirements under the Local Government Act 2020, we as councillors have incorporated a set of values that we agreed are core to undertaking our roles. And these are integrity, respect, inclusion, collaboration, leadership, accountability and honesty, and finally, initiative. A revised copy of the councillor conduct with some minor formatting alterations was circulated to the councillors today. It is my recommendation that we adopt the revised councillor code of conduct that was circulated to all councillors and the attachment 11.1.1 be updated for the purposes of the minutes. Can I have a mover, please, for this? Councillor Geringer, could I please have a seconder? Councillor Lording, thank you. Councillor Geringer, would you like to speak? I'm assuming you're moving the motion as
per the recommendation, Madam Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to speak to the motion?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Lordy, would you like to speak to the motion?
Just a real quick one. I think a great deal of work was done on this. at one stage, I felt way too much work was being done on it, but on reading it today, I thought it was rather good. So well done to all of us guys. Thank you.
And thank you to the officers' support. Would anyone else wish to speak for the to the motion? Councillor Walsh.
Just very briefly, Madam Mayor, I'd just like to thank Ms. Kearney and her team for the rapid response in undertaking the editorials today so that we were able to complete this item, as well as all the work that had been done before. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further comments? Any further? Okay. Councillor Geringer, would you like to close?
Close, please, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving on to 11.2, the Quarterly Council Plan 2017 to 2021 report to the 31st of December 2020. Ms. Kearney, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Council Plan report to the 30th of December of 2020 demonstrates a number of initiatives having been achieved despite COVID-19 playing havoc with Council activities. And a number of things have actually been moved along to meet the target of up to 50% complete by the due date. It's pleasing to note that 87% of actions are on track, and under the Council's core 4 pillars of the Council Plan, we've achieved significant progress. 93% of actions under the pillar for our people are on track, and only one item needing more attention to bring it to conclusion by the due date at the end of the year. For our place, we have completed 14 actions on track at 100%. And these actions are focused on the environment, livability, recreation, and encouraging tourism, where Murrindindi is a welcoming and attractive place to visit. Under the theme of our prosperity, 75% of initiatives are on track, with 9 out of 12 actions underway, with 3 requiring more work. Our prosperity actions are largely about building an environment for the community and business to thrive, the attraction and retention of business investment, partnerships that promote our natural assets, and vibrant range of events. With respect to our promise, as the fourth pillar, 10 of 12 actions are on track or equivalent to 77%. This pillar is about our promise and actions that focus on advocacy, developing a strong customer-focused culture, ensuring financial sustainability through sound financial and asset management, as well as supporting a skilled, engaged and flexible workforce of the future. I recommend the recommendation as written in the report 11.2, that Council receive and note the quarterly report ending the 31st of December 2020 on the status of actions from the Priority Action Plan 2020 to 21. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Kearney. Are there any questions from councillors? Thank you. Given there's no questions, would someone like to move a motion? Councillor Haslam. Is that as per the council?
As per the officer's recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Haslam. Would someone like to second? Councillor Gallagher. Let me get my notes here. Councillor Haslam, would you like to speak to the motion?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Gallagher, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to thank Ms. Kearney for the report, but also commend this report to the community for review. It is a significant list of achievements over the quarter, and it is well worth review of all of the services that are delivered by council and the extent to which they're on track or ahead of schedule in most cases. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else wish to speak to the motion? Councillor Hasler, would you like to close?
Yes, Madam Mayor, close, please.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you very much. Moving on then to item 11.3, the quarterly finance report to the 31st of December 2020. I believe Ms. Kearney again, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This report, excuse me, is the presentation of the financial statements through to December 2020. The report provides a quarterly financial report for the period ending in December. The report includes 4 statements. They include the comprehensive income statement, the balance sheet, the statement of cash flow and reconciliation of non-discretionary cash and reserves. It's also important at the at the second quarter financial report timing that under Section 95 of the Act, the adoption of a formal, the CEO make a statement as to whether or not there is a need for a formal revised budget being required. In this instance, the CEO has reported that that is not required for Murrindindi. The statements for the second quarter to December are included in attachments to the report and include at Statement A, the income statement at Statement A includes a number of changes as noted in the table contained in the report. And most of the changes in particular regard a reduction in income, largely associated with earned interest and the reduction in commercial waste fees against unexpected COVID expenditure. The strong cash position in the underlying result supports reports on material differences and more than 10% at the end. Council strong position, cash position in the underlying result also reports on material differences of more than 10% at year end of more than 500,000. The table that is included in the report after the income statement outlines in detail in columns 1 and 2 what the line item relates to for items 1 through 13 and identifies the changes that have occurred from the time of the adopted budget through to December. Also detailed in the report is the breakdown of expenditure associated with COVID-19. There's a detailed analysis that explains where expenditure has been met across a range of activities of councils, in particular associated with councils' community and business recovery plans. The balance sheet, which is statement 4, has explanations provided in the report addressing movements in assets, liabilities, and equity. The cash flow statement at statement C describes the cash flow, operating investments, and finance activities of councils. Of particular note, the statement shows a fall in operating activities generated by operations. The amount is $1.716 million and is a combination of the expected operating deficit and a growth in debtors, as articulated in Statement A. Non-discretionary cash and council reserves in Statement D lists all council reserves together with funds held as deposits or in trust. Those held in trust are required to be refunded out of date in the future. The statement shows a movement from $12.3 million in the original budget to $10.8 as at the 31st of December. Council's reserves can accommodate this shift in cash held. It is also likely that over the course of the next 6 months that there will be some rebalancing of that change in cash held to the positive. And finally, the report contains information associated with councillor expenses over the last quarter to the 31st of December. This report supports the council plan, our promise strategy to maintain council's financial sustainability through sound financial and asset management. I draw council's attention to the officer recommendation that council receives the quarterly financial report to the 31st of December 2020 and notes that the chief executive officer advises that a revised budget for the 2021 financial year is not required. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kearney. Are there any questions from councillors? Thank you. Would someone like to move a motion then? Councillor Walsh.
Yes, I'd like to move the motion as per the officer recommendation, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Councillor Walsh. Is there a seconder, please? Councillor Geringer. Councillor Walsh, would you like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think it's, whilst on the surface, the change from a positive to a negative in terms of our final result would appear an unhappy state of affairs. In reality, I think the fact that we're in such a strong cash position and able to weather the storm that was created by COVID is a credit to the way the council and the council staff have been managing the funds. So I feel quite comfortable with the outcome and what is projected by the end of the year. And I'd just like to congratulate the staff for the good work they've been doing in keeping track of all these expenses. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. Councillor Geringer, would you like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, I just wanted to reiterate what Councillor Walsh said and thank everyone for the great job that they continue to do, or we wouldn't be in this position. So, yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Councillor Geringer. Does anyone else wish to speak to the motion? If that's the case, there's no one else wishing to speak. Councillor Walsh, would you like to close?
Close, Madam Mayor, thank you.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving on to item... Here we are. Item 11.4, the Quarterly Capital Works Report to the 31st of December 2020. Mr. Albertini, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Councillors. The purpose of this report is to give Councillors an update of the quarterly result up to the end of 31st December for the Capital Works Program, the delivery of the Capital Works Program. During this period, there's been an increase in the amount of commitments, and we currently have up to, at the end of December, up to $7.9 million worth of commitment, total commitments, which represents about 43% of the current revised budget. The chart indicates that we're tracking according to our spending profile, so it's anticipated we'll continue that particular trend. There are over 120 projects, 122 in exact, and of those, all of them have commenced apart from 11, which will be commencing shortly. So the program is well on track to be delivered. The report highlights some of the key expenditures as well as projects that have been completed, and it's quite detailed in the report for councils and the community's leisure to read. The report also highlights what we classify as the major projects or key level one projects, gives a summary of where the status of those projects and how they are tracking according to our program. So to keep the councils aware of them, as also the community. The report also highlights a need to do to carry out some financial adjustments, which are listed within the report itself. These adjustments have been determined due to scope changes or inclusion of new projects or due to variations because of latent conditions. They are being funded from savings from other projects across the programs due to good to favourable tendering. The report is presented with a recommendation to note the actual report and also to seek Council's support for the financial adjustments, and it's presented for Council's resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Albertini. Are there any questions from councillors? Would someone like to move a motion then? Councillor Lordy. As per the officer recommendation?
As per the officer's recommendation, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lording. Was someone willing to second that motion? Councillor Haslam, thank you. Councillor Lording, would you like to speak to the motion?
I just want to reiterate the things I've said in the past about this area of the business. Vito and his troops have done a really good job in controlling things. And if you look at the expenditure versus anticipated, I've never seen a graph closer together. So pat on the back to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Haslam, would you like to speak to the motion?
Just reiterating the same comments. Well done. You're working very hard and achieving some good things. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to speak to the motion? Given there's no further discussion, Councillor Lording, would you like to close?
Yes, please. Close, please.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving on to item 12. Are there any notices of motion?
No, there are none, Madam Mayor.
Item 13, are there any matters deferred from previous meetings?
No, Madam Mayor.
Item 14, is there any urgent business?
Yes,
Madam Mayor. I believe so, Madam Mayor. Yep.
Thank you. Councillor Haslam.
I would like to request to cease logging at Snobs Creek. For urgent business, sorry.
Right, so you'd like to consider an item as urgent business?
Sorry, Yes, item the item for urgent business is the request to cease logging at Snobs Creek.
Is there a seconder to that motion, please? Councillor Walsh.
Madam Mayor, just before you enter debate, if I may just clarify that that the item being referred to has arisen since the preparation of the agenda, and it's something that can't be, the action associated with it can't be postponed till the following council meeting, hence the item coming forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chesworth, for the clarification. That's easier. Sorry. We've had the two motions. Oh, move. Are there any questions? Councillor Haslam?
I'd like to talk to the motion.
Accept it first. So all those in favour of dealing with the urgent item. All those against? Motion carried. Okay, Councillor Haslam, would you now like to speak to your item?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. On the 24th of May 2017, Council adopted the statement on the management of Central Highlands forests, which called on the Victorian Government to phase out current native timber harvesting activities in the Central Highland forests within the Murrindindi Shire, and in particular to cease harvesting in the Rubicon Valley. Pending resolution of the best approach for the future protection and use of these unique areas, and invest now to assist in industry transition and ensure that communities reliant on timber harvesting can continue to be part of a thriving economy in the future, including transition to alternatives, plantation-based timber supply. Since 2017, the state government has announced the phasing out of native timber harvesting by 2030. However, logging in the Central Highlands has increased through the Rubicon Valley and now is being conducted in the Snobs Creek area, with logging trucks using Snobs Creek Road as a major access to the logging coops. The road has been broken up and dust covers the trees alongside the creek. Of immediate concern is the planned logging of coops between the Snobs Creek catchment. The coops are dry cleaner, Gulmarg, laundry, dry spell, Hills Hoist, Kinabalu, Curious George, and Washboard. Vic Forest is about to commence logging of unique, old, and mixed species forests in these coops at Snobs Creek from the 28th of February 2021. If the logging is allowed to proceed, tourist trails through pristine forest will be destroyed. Pollution of Snobs Creek from the logging will threaten the viability of the Snobs Creek trout hatchery, and the increased dust from the destruction of Snobs Creek Road will further pollute the creek and render the formerly popular Snobs Creek Falls unviable as a tourist attraction. I would like to move the motion that Council, as a matter of urgency, contact Vic Forest to request logging in Snobs Creek cease immediately. The coops concerned are Dry Cleaner, Gulmarg, Laundry, Dry Spell, Hills Hoist, Kinabalu, Curious George, and Washboard. Due to concerns about adverse environmental and tourism impacts of the logging, send a copy of this request to the Minister for Energy, Environment, and Climate Change also. Local members of parliament. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Is there someone willing to second that motion? Councillor Lording. Councillor Haslam, would you like to speak to the motion now?
Nowhere else in Murrindindi Shire has this unique mix of old species forests that survived the 1939 and other subsequent fires. Irreversible damage on the environment, which compounds the effect on climate change. Tourism and recreation will be heavily impacted if not destroyed. Cease logging in Dry Cleaner, Gulmarg, Laundry, Dry Spell, Hills Hoist, Kinabalu, Curious George, and Washboard Coops. We're not asking for all logging to stop, only the previously mentioned. We hope future generations will be able to experience the unique, pristine, natural beauty we are so lucky to have as our backyard. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I forgot who seconded. Councillor Lording, did you wish to speak to the motion?
Yes, I would. The logging has been causing me a great deal of concern for an awful long time. I'm a farmer here, and I've noticed that rainfall seems to be rather erratic, and I just hope it's not from deforestation. I fly around a fair bit, and going over the ranges, they're really being decimated in our area, and we get very little economic benefit for that. This particular area that Councillor Haslam is talking about is a very diverse area. It's not just mountain ash, it's lots of different trees and therefore lots and lots of different fauna, you name it. Mosquitoes even live there. So I would really like, just if we could possibly stop logging in this area, which is scheduled very soon, until we've had a good chance to talk to Vic Forests and ministers and other things to see if we can have this area bypassed. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to speak to the motion? Councillor Walsh.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Firstly, I want to thank the members of the community across the Shire who have brought this issue to our notice. I also want to thank Councillor Haslam for her work in bringing the motion to the table. I support the motion. Last Friday, I visited Snobs Creek Falls and was dismayed at the state of the area. The dust churned up by the logging trucks on the broken up road has spread across everything. Formerly lush green foliage was a sea of grey. Moss-covered banks had been transformed into walls of grey sludge. Holding the handrail on the grey mud-covered steps resulted in hands covered in grit and grime. Any rain would wash all the muck into Snobs Creek and onwards to the trout hatchery, originally established to take advantage of the formerly crystal clear waters. While travelling through the coops marked for logging, the experience at the falls showed how little protection would be provided by the proposed buffers between the coops and the creek. There would only be a veneer of vegetation, a facade of a forest. The rest would be gone. No longer a pristine area that could be enjoyed. No longer a tourist attraction. Environmentally, a travesty. The operations to date have necessitated Council flagging $750,000 to upgrade and repair its section of Snobs Creek Road. DELP are also trying to raise more funds to repair the road and parking area to reduce the dust around the Snobs Creek Falls. Combined, that's nearly $1 million, which if the logging was stopped, would be a great investment to bring tourism back to the falls. If logging continues, it will literally be money down the creek. The Local Government Act directs all councils to have the mitigation and planning for climate change risks as an overarching governance principle. We are directed to act, and act we must. We can no longer state a principle and leave it at that. We have to follow through, especially when we see threats to climate change mitigation, such as the proposed destruction of this pristine area. The state government has said that logging of native forests will cease by 2030, with timber production moving to being plantation-based. Even if current harvesting rates were reduced to allow the industry to continue in our shire until that date, and provided we have no more fires in our forests, unfortunately, we are now too late for a steady, phased transfer of jobs from native timber harvesting into plantation. We'll in fact need all the jobs we can develop in every other area, especially in tourism. If we don't start preserving all our ecotourism assets now, then come 2030, there will be no forests, no timber jobs, and no tourism to take up the slack. We must do all we can to stop the coops around Snobs Creek from being logged, and I feel that this motion is a good start to that end. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other councillor wishing to talk? Councillor Gallagher.
Madam Mayor, like Councillor Haslam, I do not support an immediate cessation of logging in the Murrindindi Shire. Many members of our community rely on the sector for employment and for economic benefits which flow to businesses and the families of our region. I do support a transition to a plantation timber supply, and I believe this council has a duty to advocate for community members to ensure that there is a viable alternative future for timber industry workers, machine operators and haulage contractors. There are many and complex aspects to this industry, and so it is essential for this council to consult widely with Vic Forest, with affected timber industry representatives and with community members as a complete and concise policy framework and advocacy plan is established. Alexandra is considered by many still a timber town. Nevertheless, this urgent motion, which effectively calls for a moratorium on clear felling in a collection of coops upstream of the Snob Creek Falls, serves to preserve an area of mixed species timber and wetlands in a temperate forest, which I'm informed has survived fires of the last century. I'm further informed that this is the last remaining area in Murrindindi Shire with this diverse maturity of timber cover. I note that the land in question is not Murrindindi Shire land, but rather Rubicon State Forest, and that the motion is one of advocacy to request that the state authority act to discontinue clear felling in this part of the forest. The Local Government Act 2020, the principle-based framework, as Councillor Walsh outlined, under which this council functions. It's rather inflexible in the manner in which it directs councillors to act in the interest of the entire community in consideration of climate change impacts and with a view to the interest of future generations. These are not hints or tips, but rather clear directives. And for these reasons, for this specific parcel of land, I'll support the motion.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to speak to the motion? Before we close, I'd like to just make a comment. I will be voting in favour of this motion in order for Council to advocate for protection of this particular fragile landscape. However, having been involved in the development of the statement on the management of the Central Highlands Forest in 2017, I understand the heartache this causes for some families whose lives have been built around the logging industry. And I am mindful of the angst that this current motion may cause some community members at this time. I do not make this decision lightly, and I will be looking at all opportunities to ensure that I and my fellow councillors are fully briefed from all relevant parties. Conversations from all representatives from all interested groups and departments will be actively encouraged. I continue to support the statement principles of supporting families in our community by investment to assist in the industry transition and ensure that our communities reliant on timber harvesting can continue to be part of a thriving economy into the future, including transition to alternative plantation-based timber supply. Thank you. Okay, Councillor Haslam, would you like to close?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, close.
I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you. Moving on then to item 15, the councillor reports. Councillor Haslam, do you have a report this month?
Yes, Madam Mayor. Resource Recovery Unit. The Waste Resource Recovery Strategy 2030 is progressing, with the briefing proposed soon. Eildon closed landfill remediation works. Works began mid-February. Resource recovery centres have undergone extensive works to ensure compliance with EPA combustible waste guidelines, including the development of safety management plans for each site. A number of funding opportunities from Sustainability Victoria have become available for feasibility and shovel-ready projects, and we're considering options. Councillors made a site tour of the Alexandra landfill. Yea Resource Recovery Centre, due diligence work progressing. On Environment Unit, transition to becoming the Auspice Council for the Goulburn Brooken Greenhouse Alliance has begun. The start date is July 1, 2021. Queensland fruit fly has been found in a monitoring trap in King Lake. Information pack and letters are to be sent out to residents. Clean Up Australia Day registration information has been distributed to communities through media channels. Clean Up Australia Day corporate event is to be held at Eildon Pondage on March 2nd. And this will be a COVID-safe event. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Haslam. Councillor Gerringer.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I wasn't going to say anything, so I'll just make this short and sweet because I found this out today. It's in relation to one of our young residents within King Lake, Maya O'Loughlin, who is a grade 6 student at the King Lake West Primary School. She's managed to make the semi-finals of the 7 News Young Achiever Awards this year. It's just very exciting for her. So congratulations to Maya.
Congratulations. Thank you. Councillor Lording.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. just on waste, I'd just like to explain a little bit that Councillor Haslam is a member of the forum of the Goulburn Valley Waste Resource Recovery Group. That forum is a group of councillors plus others that that come up with the good information and feed that up to the board. I'm actually on the board, so we work closely together. And Murrindindi is one of the few people that has a really good representative to the government, in fact, especially within the next 18 months, because a lot of work is being done. And I can assure you that absolute heaps of work is being done at state government level. There's some funding coming. They're looking at the number of bins. So if you think that we're not doing anything, let me assure you that we are working so hard. It's the old duck in the pond. The feet are going like heck, and we look like we're doing nothing. But that's not so. A lot of work is being done, and we are going to deliver a good waste resource recovery outcome this time. Thank you. Now, I want to talk about community assets. I'll try and keep it as brief as I can. Gordon's Bridge Road in Castella, that's the one that everybody takes a shortcut through. The installation of the guardrail is completed this week. The road sealing preparation works is well underway, and that'll happen in early March, the resealing that is. Eildon landfill rehabilitation works are currently underway. The installation of shade sails in the Yay swimming pool has been completed. King Lake Memorial Reserve tennis court access pathway to commence this week. Hope it doesn't rain. Being a farmer, I hope it does, but I hope it doesn't. High Street Yay renewal of the irrigation for the centre medium has commenced. I noticed the other day when they were doing the mowing there was a cloud of dust, so we really need to get that in fairly quick. Yay Recreation Reserve, new irrigation to the oval has now been completed. Dove Cottage, Alexandra, the external painting is underway right now. Eildon Floating Cities, works have commenced. Only 3 more. Kinglake Streetscape Works, the design is finalised and the construction package is currently out to tender. Woohoo! Designs are currently underway for the replacement of the Breaker Day Road Bridge in Glenburn and the Yay Caravan Park Bridge in Yay. Two really important jobs. Kinglake Memorial Reserve Toilet Block, design and construction. The design part is almost complete and then we'll go out to tender. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Lording. Councillor Walsh.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just in regards to the Cook Services portfolio, the valuable work undertaken in that area has already been highlighted in most of the items that we've already discussed tonight. But there is one other element that I need to bring to your attention. Both Councillor Lording and I attended the board meeting of the Central Ranges Local Learning and Employment Network yesterday. And in the discussions, it was agreed that despite the involvement of local government from the three shires that the Crillon services, most of the councillors have no real idea of the ongoing work that's being done. But instead of me sitting here reading out an endless array of achievements, we have now decided that you will soon be getting copies of the quarterly newsletter so you can understand the work that this little organisation is doing for our youth across the three shires. So look forward to that one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Walsh. Councillor Gallagher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The shaping of our future strategic planning program is well underway, with a significant milestone being the adoption of our community engagement policy this evening. That policy will guide community consultation as Council develops its vision statement and the work towards the 2021 to 2025 Council plan. Having your say will become easier as Council's new engagement platform, The Loop, rolls out on 8th March. And Madam Mayor, in maternal and child health service delivery, there has been some confusion around the administration of immunisation. Immunisation services are still being provided, albeit with some additional PPE requirements of the team administering those dosages. This is, of course, distinct from the COVID-19 immunisation program, on which our CEO, Mr. Chesworth, will continue to provide community updates as detail emerges. Murrindindi Shire Council is encouraging community members to get involved in the Community Visitor Scheme, a free service which provides friendship and companionship to older members of our community by connecting them with local volunteers who arrange regular visits. To find out more, contact the Council's Dindi Link team on 5772033. The pool season is set to close in the next 2 weeks, and I look forward to sharing reports of a spike in pool visitor numbers after a season of fee-free swimming and a broadened demographic of pool visitors. Madam Mayor and councillors, the Alexandra Race Club and Recreation Reserve Committee of Management met on the 23rd of February, and a great deal of focus was on equitable distribution of income to the reserve. The proposed formalised financial structure serves to assist development of a program of works in conjunction with the Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning. The committee AGM is scheduled for the 30th of March. Looking ahead, the Audit and Risk Committee is set to meet on the 4th of March. In local news, Alexandra Rotary Club presents Music in the Park in Rotary Park, Alexandra, on the 13th of March. Alexandra Pro Rodeo will run on the 6th of March on Labor Day long weekend. And Alexandra Race Club will host the Alex Races Rock race meeting this coming Saturday, the 27th of Feb. Briefly, Madam Mayor, Tamara Ruffin of Murrindindi Family Daycare has been declared a national finalist Educator of the Year in the 2020 Excellence in Family Daycare Awards. There are four national finalists, with Tamara being recognised as the Educator of the Year for the Victoria and Tasmania region. Finalists will head to Canberra for an intimate celebration of their accomplishments and for the naming of the Australian Educator of the Year. So congratulations to Tamara. Finally, I look forward to resuming public COVID normal council meetings on the 24th of March in the Alexandra Council Chambers.
Thank you, Councillor Gallagher. So we've got lots of people that are celebrating good news tonight. So thank you for sharing that again and congratulations to Tamara. Councillor Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The last month has kept all us councillors very busy. We have benefited from media training that will assist us to be more effective in our communications with our constituents. We have met with our federal MP, Helen Haynes, for fruitful discussions. We've had 2 days of visiting many areas and townships within our shire, and it's greatly increased my understanding of the breadth and great natural beauty to be found within our shire. There are many assets that are owned and or maintained by the shire, from small community halls and reserves to large developments such as the Yay Sale Yards. They all require their own program of maintenance and or development. These shire-wide tours will assist me to work for the betterment of the whole shire and not just Cheviot Ward. Weekly council briefings have also given me an insight into the workings of the council, from roads and bridges to budgets and balance sheets. As a result of the COVID pandemic, working from home has become more commonplace. Many people from urban environments are choosing to take advantage of residing in rural areas. Many individuals and families are desiring to relocate to places with a different, slower paced lifestyle, such as what we have here in the Murrindindi Shire. In my capacity as the Planning Portfolio Councillor, I aim to encourage Council to undertake a review of the planning zones within the Shire. We need to investigate the development of appropriate rural residential zones. We must also maintain extensive farming zones, and especially note those areas of high quality and productive farming land that are required for traditional agriculture. Areas of the natural environment must also be protected. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Carpenter. I'll now present my Mayor's report for February. The agenda has been full and I will keep my report short. Tonight we have adopted our Councillor Code of Conduct. Local government is the only level of government that has a requirement to develop a Code of Conduct under the Local Government Act 2020. Whilst it is a requirement under the Act, I am proud that this council has actively embraced the development of this code and has additionally identified and embraced a set of shared values. This month, our community and businesses have been once again impacted by the circuit breaker over 5 days to limit the spread of COVID-19. Council services were disrupted. Businesses once again had restricted operation, and a number of community events organised by our valuable community volunteers had to be either postponed or cancelled altogether. Our community already is experiencing disruption due to this virus, and it is now more than ever important. It is now more than ever that it needs a council that listens to, works for, and advocates for and on behalf of all the community. We must ensure that we are fully informed on all issues that we act upon, and we must endeavour to work transparently and without bias. On the matter of advocacy, Council welcomed the opportunity to talk with Federal Member Helen Haynes, Member for Indi. We were able to discuss directly with her on a number of issues, including advocating for development and improvement in the delivery of digital connectivity to businesses and communities across Murrindindi Shire. The issue of oversubscription of both satellite and landline delivery have been highlighted during the recent times of increased tourism activity, as well as the increased pressure on the system during the recent 5-day circuit breaker action, where people once again were required to work and study from home. Thank you very much. Moving on to the Chief Executive Officer report, item 16.1. Mr. Chesworth.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Council has sought a report from myself concerning the music events that occurred over the Australia Day long weekend at 171 Rubicon Road and the actions taken by officers. The event took place over 4 days, from Friday the 22nd of January to Monday the 25th of January, without any appropriate statutory approvals. Now, in your report tonight, councillors, you'll see that there is a description of the land on which this event did occur. And I won't go through all that description, albeit to say that it was a rural property on Rubicon Road, adjoining the Rubicon River. The event was organised by a not-for-profit Aboriginal organisation, and I'll attempt to pronounce this, and I apologise if it's incorrectly pronounced, at Tongbarangi Nagari Incorporated, which creates Aboriginal dance music gatherings, cultural events and community-based programs for the Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal community. The organisation is completely volunteer-run. The event called Yamanda Gathering was described as a family-friendly multi-day outdoor dance and cultural gathering. Council officers were first made aware of the event on the night before the event. This is Thursday, the 21st of January, when it appeared on Facebook. And shortly after, the property address was made public. Entry to the event was contingent on patrons purchasing an associate membership of the organisation. In the process of investigating the event, it was revealed that a similar but smaller event occurred in the previous year, over the same weekend at the same location. Council was not informed of that event, nor were any complaints received by council in relation to that event. In terms of stopping event, despite the description of the event on Facebook, very little was known by officers in the initial hours of becoming aware of the event about the nature of the activities that were planned over the 4 days. And nor was it possible to quickly or adequately assess any potential risks associated with that event. So we received legal advice on the morning of Friday, the 22nd of January, that there was insufficient time to seek and obtain an interim enforcement order from VCAT to attempt to stop the event from proceeding. In lieu of this, I also contacted Victoria Police and was advised not to attempt to physically intervene to stop the event, as it was not clear how this could be achieved practically and efficiently with patrons already on site and without sufficient backup resources available to manage any potential risks or consequences to the public, to the patrons on site, and to our own officers in terms of their safety. It was agreed with the police that council's community safety officers and VicPol officers would patrol and monitor the event activities over the duration of the event to be able to address any issues that arose. Council officers also attended the event site later on that Friday morning and informed the property owners and the event organizer that the event did not have the appropriate permissions and there were potential legal consequences if the event continued. Other emergency service organisations, such as the SES, the CFA, the Ambulance, Alexander District Health, and the Regional Emergency Management Planning Committee were all advised of the event on the Friday by myself, and these organisations had to take this last minute advice into account for their internal organisational planning and resourcing for the coming long weekend. In terms of the progress of the event, over the duration of the event, council officers undertook routine patrols and attended the event site on a number of occasions, as did VicPol officers. Despite the event proceeding, at all times the event organisers were cooperative, they did not object to the presence of council officers and responded very positively to requests for access and information. The event was set up in a designated car parking area in the cleared land. There were family camping to the west of the site. There was other camping interspersed in treed areas. And there was infrastructure that you would typically expect to see in a significant event. There were portable toilets, there were showers, there was water available for patrons. There were tents for kids that were separated from the main area. There was first aid and information sites. There were COVID-19 sanitization stations and other structures, a stage area and some firefighting equipment, etc. The event had its own organised security, and upon request, council officers were provided with a documented emergency management plan for the event. The event consisted of dance music interspersed with cultural activities and catered for participants that included families with children. The organiser had advised us that the event was attended by 472 participants with 73 volunteers and 117 artists and cultural facilitators, which makes the total of 662 people attending the event. In terms of the permissions that were required, under the Murrindindi planning scheme, the use of land for the purpose of a place of assembly requires a planning permit. A place of assembly is defined as land where people congregate for religious, spiritual, or cultural activities, entertainment, or meetings. There were no permits obtained or applied for in this case. There are a number of agencies that would have been given the opportunity to respond to an application for planning approval. This would have included VicPol, the Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning, the Goulburn Broken CMA, and the Country Fire Authority. These responses would have ensured that any permit issued would have assessed and addressed any potential risks associated with an event of this size. Also, community members would have been notified of any planning permit application and given an opportunity to lodge submissions and raise concerns. The site is within an area of cultural sensitivity as defined by the Aboriginal Heritage Regulations 2018. However, it is unlikely that the event would have triggered the need for a cultural heritage management plan. It is noted that Council is not the responsible authority for administering or enforcing COVID-19 restrictions, including those pertaining to events, and that this was a matter for the state government. Both VicPol and the Department of Health and Human Services were contacted by council officers, myself, to advise of the event taking place with regard to the COVID restrictions in force or in place. In terms of an explanation by the landholder and the event organiser, both the landowners and the event organisers were requested to explain why the event took place without the appropriate permits and what actions were taken to check whether permits were required. The owners of the property advised that they support the organisation and their cultural beliefs and were assured by the event organisers that all laws would be complied with. The event organisers stated that they had undertaken their own research on whether a permit was required, had come to the conclusion, erroneously, that no permit was required in this instance. They also stated that they received advice from DHHS COVID hotline that the event did not fall under the state government's COVID event management framework, as it was deemed, in this situation, a private event. The actions taken, in terms of an assessment of the event, the actions taken by the organisers to determine what permissions were required were clearly inadequate and not of a standard acceptable by an organisation that manages events. The site was generally managed well over the duration of the event. There were adequate toilets. Camping occurred in defined areas with families in separate areas, and a kids' place provided, as I previously outlined. The organisers were extremely cooperative with Council and VicPol over the event timeframe and since the event, allowing full access and responding to all questions. Officers were advised from a neighbour that there had been an issue with noise, particularly in the first two nights. This neighbour rang the owners and police to complain. The organiser of the event rang the complainant on the Sunday afternoon, and after being told of the impact of the noise, the volume was lowered for the next two nights. Council received no other complaints directly in relation to the conduct of the event. The CMA received a complaint about earthworks in a waterway. These works are considered to be minor and no further action will be taken by the Goulburn Broken CMA. I was contacted as the acting CEO by Vic Police at the conclusion of the event and advised that there were no major concerns from their perspective with how the event was managed over the 4 days, and added that the level of oversight by the organisers was satisfactory and that VicPol would not be taking any further action on the matter. In terms of Council's enforcement options, Council has the option to take enforcement action against the landowner and or the event organiser for the breach of the Murrindindi Planning Scheme. And the enforcement options available to Council range from a negotiated outcome to right the way through to prosecution through the courts, with other options being official warnings and planning infringement notices. I'll just provide a quote from the guide to Victorians planning system, which states that enforcement should occur when there is a clear breach of the Act, a planning scheme, a permit condition, or a Section 173 agreement, and the breach warrants enforcement, especially if it causes detriment to the community. The main emphasis of enforcement should be obtaining compliance rather than prosecuting offenders, and adopting a conciliatory approach through a process of education, communication, and negotiation will more often provide a positive outcome. The various enforcement options, therefore, were viewed with this in mind. So in terms of the final decision that's been made in relation to the enforcement matters here, it has been determined that the offence of using the site for a place of assembly has been proven, and the breach is determined to be a serious offence. On assessing the breach against the enforcement options available, it has been determined that the owners of the site should be issued with a formal warning. While they relied on another party to ensure compliance with the laws, it is their responsibility as owners to ensure that any use of their property has the appropriate permissions. The organisers are assessed as having a greater culpability here by not checking with council prior to the event taking place to determine what level of approval may be required. It is recognised the event organisers did have a genuine belief that statutory approvals were not required in this situation. So in determining an appropriate force enforcement action, the following community impacts were considered. The event raised considerable anxiety within the community with respect to potential adverse impacts associated with the event, including noise, fire, potentially, especially given Monday, the 25th of January, was declared a day of total fire ban in the area. COVID-19 spread was a concern, poor patron behaviour, and so forth. Additional impost was placed on emergency service agencies, as I've outlined, and recognition that many other volunteer-based organisations make the effort to identify and address the planning scheme requirements, and they obtain relevant approvals before staging their events. Consideration was also given to the following points. The event organisation is a legitimate, not-for-profit, volunteer-run organisation. The event, fortunately, did not result in any significant adverse outcomes, causing significant detriment to the community, and was considered on balance to have been relatively well managed. And this needs to be considered in terms of the severity of the enforcement action. A check with a previous council with whom the event organiser has worked in staging multiple events did not reveal any shortcomings or issues with the conduct of the event organisers or any adverse impacts associated with their events. The contrition or remorsefulness of the organisers was also taken into account with respect to the breach and their cooperative attitude taken to the requests of council and VicPol officers. And we also considered the positive aims and the objectives of the event. So on balance, it was felt that there needed to be a definite consequence for the event organiser. However, prosecution with the threat of a very significant monetary penalty and possible conviction for individuals was not considered the most appropriate outcome in this situation. Council has previously sought prosecution for breach of planning controls in situation where there has been repeated and willful disregard for planning requirements and which have resulted in significant adverse impacts on the neighbouring community. Instead, the event organisers have agreed to a negotiated outcome and have agreed to undertake community work under council's direction. This will consist of a minimum of 450 hours or 56 person days, if you wish, of donated labour for environmental works to be undertaken in the Shire involving native veg restoration and weed removal. Other than cost of plants, which have already been procured by the council, all costs associated with attendance and conduct of these works will be borne by the event organiser. This is seen as an acceptable and proactive outcome that provides some benefit back to the Murrindindi community whilst providing a consequence to the organisation for the breach. Prosecution is seen as the last resort in this instance, and only if the alternative negotiated outcome could not be achieved. The event organiser has also provided a statement to council acknowledging the breach and the impacts on the community and expressing contrition and remorse and a desire to work constructively with council and the community moving forward. This letter is attached to this report. So the recommendation associated with this report tonight is that, when I get to it, that Council notes this report from the Acting CEO concerning the music event that occurred over Australia Day long weekend at 171 Rubicon Road and the actions taken by officers.
Thank you, Mr. Chesworth, for quite a comprehensive report. Are there any questions from councillors? If there are no questions, would someone like to put a motion? Councillor Carpenter.
As per the officer's recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Carpenter. Is there a seconder for the motion, please? Councillor Gerringer. Thank you. Councillor Carpenter, would you like to speak to the motion?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Gerringer, would you like to speak to the motion?
No, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Would anyone else wish to speak to the motion? That being the case, Councillor Carpenter, would you like to close?
Close, thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Motion carried. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chesworth. Moving on to item 16.2, the Chief Executive Officer Report. Have you had a long drink, Mr. Chesworth?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This will be only a brief report this month, and you've already touched on a couple of these issues. Unfortunately, this month, our state has had to endure another COVID-related lockdown, much shorter than the first two, but extending full stage four restrictions into regional Victoria. This has had a very sudden and significant impact on many of our businesses, particularly again in the hospitality, accommodation and retail sectors, but this time also extending into our construction and manufacturing sectors. There were further impacts on our community with the reintroduction of homeschooling and the closure of many community facilities and the cancellation, as you've outlined, Madam Mayor, of some events, social gatherings and many important family get-togethers. Again, our staff were able to adjust our operations and customer services from a physical presence to a virtual or phone experience. Importantly for our residents, our customer contact centre was able to ensure customer services continued during the lockdown. The due date for those paying rates by full instalment was extended to the end of the month, particularly benefiting our customers who prefer to pay over the counter. Our business support team and our Dindi Links services were again activated to assist and advise with advice and support if it was needed during this period. The subsequent news that COVID vaccinations have commenced in Australia has been welcomed by many. At this stage, the federal government has prioritised the country's frontline COVID health and community and, quarantine workers, along with the vulnerable residential aged care sector, for the first stage of this vaccine rollout. As vaccine stocks slowly increase across the country, the vaccination program will move to the broader population, with higher priority initially given to older age segments and those more at risk of complications if infected with the virus. It is too early to say when and how the vaccine program will be made available for general residents in our shire, but we are receiving regular briefings from health officials as the federal government's vaccination program rolls out. It is likely the program will take many months to deliver, and I'll have more to say about this program at our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chesworth. Moving on then to item 17, assemblies of councillors. Could someone please move that the council receives and notes the record of assemblies of councillors for 27th of January 2021 to the 17th of February 2021, please?
So moved, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Walsh, thank you. And second, please. Councillor Lording, thank you very much. All those in favour? Motion carried. moving on to item 18, the ceiling register. Could someone please move that the list of items to which this council's seal has been affixed be noted, please? Councillor Gallagher, and to second that, please. Councillor Carpenter, all those in favour? Motion carried. Thank you. Note that the meeting is now at an end at the 8:07. Thank you to those people who are still online who have taken the time to view tonight's meeting. And I'll just ask meeting support if you could please stop the live stream. Thank you.